You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome to Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck.
All right. Thank you, Esther Lynn, and welcome to a brand new edition of Between the Links on MMAfighting.com. What a weekend it was in the world of mixed martial arts. UFC 253 at the top of the heap. That is in the books. We're going to talk all about that and much more. And we're not going to waste any time at all. Let's get into this matchup, which will determine the number one contender for Phoenix Carnevale's Between the Links title. First, let us introduce the former champion back this week, hoping to get his rematch with the current champion from MMAfighting.com, Mr. Jed Meshew. Jed, how are you, man?
I love that you called it for the number one contender spot. This is not an interim belt. There are no interim titles here. And when I was a champion and you gave out an interim title, I was offended, particularly because you gave it out to a loser ne'er-do-well like that Jose Young. So I'm excited to be back, and I'm excited to try and talk trash to Boom from the safety of my computer screen and not to his face. So seems like a good plan.
And that's what this show is all about, ladies and gentlemen. And as Jed stated, his opponent, a friend of the site, a multiple-time co-host of the A-Side Live Chat, former and soon-to-be future What the Heck guest, a current UFC bantamweight slash featherweight contender, Brian Boom Kelleher joins the panel this week. How are you, my friend?
Let's go, baby. I'm good. Business is booming as usual, and Jed is dead.
It's funny. That was the first thing when I asked Brian to come on. I was like, you're going to go against Jed. And you said, what rhymes with Jed? And he goes, it's dead. So there you go, Jed. But keep that in mind. He's been waiting for that for about 24 hours now. But let's start with the star of the show on Saturday night in Abu Dhabi, Israel Adesanya. He puts away Paulo Costa in the second round, batters him with leg kicks, chipped away at his opponent until finally dropping him, mounting him, and just getting him out of there. One-sided beating from Adesanya. Brian, we're going to begin with you here. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of this all, what were your thoughts on Adesanya's performance in a fight many believed would be his toughest test in this division?
Yeah, it was pretty flawless. I expected him to get tested a little bit more, but his pinpoint accuracy, his leg kicks early on took a toll on Costa, and he just never got set. He wasn't able to deliver any offense for Israel. So he pretty much had the perfect fight, which I don't think many people expected. I thought we were all looking forward to him getting challenged and, you know, have Costa kind of come forward and throw some power on him. But it was amazing stuff. Really technical. Everything was perfect. He set him up really nice with the leg kicks, the front snap kicks, the knee teep kicks. So it was amazing.
Jed, your thoughts on Izzy's performance on Saturday night before we dive into all the fun stuff here.
Look, Mike, you know me. I love to play armchair psychologist. And Paulo Costa was defeated before he stepped in the cage. Like, that's I don't take anything away from Israel Adesanya, because that was obviously a great performance from him. But Costa did none of the things that he is known for doing. He provided no meaningful offense in the fight. He looked like he was trying to replicate Yoel Romero's game plan, which is a good idea because Yoel Romero is the true middleweight GOAT, but he couldn't do it effectively because he's not the same kind of athlete and counterfighter that Romero is. He just was target practice until he finally realized that he was getting beat up, tried to do something, and then just got annihilated. I thought it was a terrible, terrible fight from Costa. And now, like, in retrospect, all the stuff Adesanya said in the lead up, all the actions just start to make it seem like he had the measure of his man the whole way, that Costa being respectful in their meetup was just a sign of him knowing he was beat going in. And that's the big thing I take away from this, because Costa didn't look like a man who wanted to fight, and he got beat up as a result.
Now, before just to give you some context for those watching and listening right now, we have like a general set of questions that we all go through before we get into the final round. So before we get into what this general question is, Jed, a lot of people have taken issue with how Israel Adesanya conducted himself after the fight with the twerking, I guess we'll go with. I guess we'll call it twerking. But, you know, and then not only that, the words to Paulo Costa's coach that I'm not going to repeat here, and then the constant trolling on social media ever since the victory on Saturday night. So do you have an issue with this? Do you have an issue with how Adesanya has acted since the referee stopped the fight on Saturday? should something be done here? Should there be punishment involved? Like, what is your take on all this? Because something tells me you're fine with most of this stuff.
Well, I mean, who is more about free speech than Dana White and the UFC? No, nothing should be done. This is asinine. Like, I wouldn't have done the things Israel Adesanya did, but I don't care at all that he did them. There's no problem with what he did, his actions or his words. Like, it's insane. I think that it's honestly, you should be a little bit expected considering everything Costa said leading up to this fight, the kind of latent homophobia he was sort of, you know, dog whistling to in his tweets heading into this. And so to some extent, I think there's a really good, like, hey, eat your words here from the champ. But even if it wasn't, like, who gives a shit? Like, this is the only things that you should be stopped from saying are something like virulently racist or bigoted. Like, everything else is totally fine. Like, what you want to stop it? Don't get knocked out in two. And then that's it. Like, this is dumb. I can't believe we're talking about this in, you know, not to belabor this point, but it really feels like a lot more people are upset about what Izzy did than about Colby Covington's words. And I'll let you kind of extrapolate the latent issues with that entire concept.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, which is part of why we asked this question. Plus we had a meeting earlier. I'm like, yeah, we should talk about this too. And I'm curious to get your perspective on this, Brian, because you are a fighter. You compete in that same octagon. You're a martial artist. What have you made of how Izzy celebrated his win? And if you were Paulo Costa, would you be pissed about it? Or do you just have to suck it up and deal with it because of things that you said in the lead up here?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Paulo Costa, I'm pretty embarrassed, you know, but I don't think you could really say much about it. I think it was kind of deserved. I mean, you know, all is fair in love and war. Like, you know, a lot of these guys talk stuff going into the fight, and then this is what you have to deal with after the fight when you lose. You know, I think Israel's kind of loading that gun. You know, he's putting those bullets in there, and he's such a witty guy. Like, he's very sharp mentally after these fights where he remembers everything that happened in the lead up, and he just takes it all out on you right after. And I think that's part of what makes him such a star, and I think that's gonna make him even a bigger star if he keeps doing this. I think it's good for his brand. I think the UFC doesn't mind this kind of stuff, you know, like he was saying about Colby goes into a little bit more you know, controversial things. I think Izzy kind of just does funny, stupid, silly things that people get a laugh out of, and it was funny to me. I mean, I like to see humble in victory and defeat, but I also understand it with all the trash talk that he received going in, and then, you know, how he fires back in the end. So I have no issue with it.
So let me throw this back to you, Mr. Kelleher, because Adesanya, undefeated, second title defense. He's constantly compared to Anderson Silva and the title reign that Anderson had. Silva, widely considered the greatest middleweight of all time. Some people say he's the greatest fighter that has ever stepped into the octagon, the dominance, the title defenses, etc. How close is Adesanya to surpassing Silva as the middleweight GOAT? Are we sniffing that at this point, or are we still ways away here?
Yeah, I think we're a little bit ways away. You know, I think Israel, you know, he speaks English. He's a really witty guy. Like I said, he's got a great personality. I think that helps him a lot. That's probably going to catapult him a lot faster. But Silva's defended his title so many times, like, what, 10 times? So he, you know, he's done a lot more work as a middleweight, I feel like. I think Israel has a little bit of catching up to do as far as that goes. And also, you know, the amount of finishes that Silva has had and stuff like that. But it's kind of hard to compare with, you know, how the game's evolving and how you know, the competition evolves as well. But I would say he has a little bit of ways to go. He's not there just yet.
Jed, even if he surpasses Anderson Silva, you still don't believe that he will be the greatest middleweight of all time. So let me put it this way. Can Adesanya become the greatest middleweight of all time? Is that possible in your humble opinion?
I mean, yeah, it's possible. He's not in the conversation right now. And this is like, this is just the thing. The middleweight division is a little bit curious in the fact that there's Anderson Silva and there's everyone else. And because Anderson reigned for so long that there really hasn't been time for anybody else to be like the next best guy, right? It's really just him. And then everything else is whatever. The only other person that maybe Chris Weidman had a couple of defenses in there, but I mean, it's just Anderson. And so by that merit, Izzy's actually probably the second best middleweight of all time. Like, Maybe not. I think if you just look at the balance of like Dan Henderson's career, was obviously phenomenal despite competing at two weight classes, et cetera. But I mean, Adesanya at least has a case for the number two. But being number two and being close to passing Anderson are incredibly different things. And he just has to do a lot more work. I think he could do it. At this point, I don't think there's a middleweight alive I'd pick over him. Except for Yoel Romero, but he'll never fight Yoel again. So he doesn't have to do that fight again. So it's just, I mean, yeah, of course, he's a generational talent, incredibly skilled. And honestly, a lot of the top of that division matches up pretty well with what he does. So I think he's got a great chance to put together a run, but this was his second title defense. Third, I guess, if you want to count winning a title against Gastelum and then unifying with Whitaker, but two title defenses is not 10. And that's, he just has a lot to do to get there, and perhaps he can, but we should hold off that conversation for some time.
Last thing before we move to the co-main event, Jed, Paulo Costa loses his first title fight, his first fight overall, gets dominated. Seems like, at least with what he's saying, he's ready to come back and be more motivated than ever. His manager said he's not going to move up to 205 just yet because of how Adesanya has been behaving himself. He was motivated to get back to that fight. Where do you think he goes from here? Like, what can he do? He built himself up to get to this point, finally got a title fight, and then gets just a one-sided beatdown laid against him.
Yeah, it was both a beatdown and a bad performance. And I know that he is, as of like 30 minutes ago, calling for a rematch. That's not going to happen. Probably not ever going to happen unless he puts together a number of wins. So I pick somebody in the top 10-ish of the middleweight division and run it with them. I would actually say Darren Till would have been a great opponent for him, but Darren Till keeps failing upwards, and now he's going to fight Jack Manson. So I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'd have to – I guess Gastelum wouldn't be awful, but there's – I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't have a great idea on who he should fight. Any middleweight will do. He just needs wins again. Actually, a rematch with Yoel Romero would be great because that fight was super damn fun. And if you make it five rounds, Romero beats that ass. So run that back. Let's do that.
Brian, what do you think? What should be next for Paulo Costa after Saturday night?
I think you can run back the Yoel Romero. I think a cool fresh matchup would be Darren Till. You know, that would be something interesting to see, striking wise. You know, both of them are probably not going to go to the ground, so that would be interesting to see striking as well. I don't know. It's kind of funny though, because like, he was talking so much about how Yoel and Israel, that fight was so, you know, like he wasn't fighting, he's not a fighter. And then it ended up happening in that fight where he just froze up, and it was kind of similar. So I found that really interesting. But yeah, what's next? I would go for Darren Till just for the fresh matchup.
Yeah, I mean, the fight with Hermanson's interesting in December. If something happens, maybe we can slot him in there. But
The thing is, Costa froze up. Romero made a tactical decision that damn near worked. Costa came nowhere close to winning that fight. I personally scored the fight for Romero.
Like, of course you did.
I mean, but like legitimately, on rewatch, I do believe that Izzy defeated Romero like very closely. But seriously, if you guys haven't done it, go back and like just check the stats out from all of Israel Adesanya's fights. They are all amazing. And then there's Yoel Romero, and every one of his striking statistics falls off a freaking cliff. Like his accuracy, his total strikes thrown, landed, it all craters. And the first thing I thought, and I tweeted this after the fight on Saturday, is I genuinely think the most impressive performance of the year is Yoel Romero turning that predatory motherfucker into a point fighter, because that's what he did. He took what is maybe the most predatory dude in fighting and turned him into a point fighter, and that is incredible.
Well, huge night for Adesanya. He came back, he took the bad taste out of people's mouths, gets a win, and it was a big round for Jed Meshew. He gets the first point of the matchup as we head to
it's good the next. I don't like the other questions. I'm not well built for them.
All right, well, let's talk about the co-main event. We have a brand new light heavyweight champion of the world in Jan Blachowicz. Finishes Dominic Reyes in the second round. Beautiful performance from Mr. Polish Power himself. came home earlier this week to a hero's welcome in Poland, which was amazing to see. But one of the big talking points heading into the fight, not just from Blachowicz, but from Reyes as well, is that essentially we're here to turn the page in this division. John Jones is gone. Don't ask me any John Jones questions. We don't want to hear about him anymore. Jan wins, and the first thing he does is call out John Jones. Like, in the cage, before Bruce Buffer says he's the new champion, he calls out John Jones. So, Jed, we begin with you. Is this the right move for Blachowicz to make, in your opinion, to call out John Jones when you've been saying the entire time, let's get this division moving a little bit?
No, I think you have to make it. I mean, it's there's a difference between needing to get the division moving and just being a realist. And realistically, everyone knows who John Jones is, that John Jones vacated the title. The UFC didn't stray away from that fact. And so Jan is in a situation where if he does the whole, yeah, I'm just not going to talk about a thing, which Dominic Reyes was like very focused on, I know, certainly, it takes a little bit of credibility away from him, frankly. It makes it look like, okay, well, he's just not trying to think about John Jones because John Jones could take the belt from him. But by just coming out and saying, yeah, like, I do want to fight John Jones, I would like to fight the guy who is the consensus best 205er in the world, I think you just have to do it, because it also doesn't detract from what will be his next matchup, will be the winner of Thiago Santos, Glover Teixeira. Like, I mean, if John decides to come back and really just show all the FOMO that he has, then great. That's a good fight now. I'm actually really interested in that fight following Tom Reyes' beatdown. But if not, I don't think he loses anything by calling for it. And I think that that's the thing you have to do.
What do you think, Brian? Because again, we're trying to move this division forward. It's not like Jones was stripped of the title or anything. John Jones made the decision on his own to vacate the title and move up to heavyweight. So why bring his name up if that's what we're trying to do here? Was this a smart move on Jan's part, knowing that there's a good chance he doesn't get this fight, or was this a miss?
Well, I don't think it was a miss, you know, because John Jones hasn't technically went up to heavyweight yet. I know that's what he's saying he's gonna do, but he likes to kind of play troll and get on Twitter, and he would say, like, you know, what if I want to come back and take that belt real quick, like, would that annoy you guys? And I thought that was kind of funny. And you know, we haven't seen that fight. That would be a fresh fight, you know. And Reyes put up a really good fight against Jones, and look what Jan just did to Reyes. So I think that makes it even more exciting. But I don't see that fight happening. It's a good move money-wise, too. If Jan wants to make the most money, you fight John Jones on pay-per-view. But I think they're going to go with the Santos. Who is he fighting again? What's his name?
Teixeira.
Yeah, Teixeira. I think they're going to go with the winner of that fight to see, you know, who's next. And I don't mind that fight either, because Santos he has a win over Jan in the past. So I think that would be a good revenge fight for him. So I don't think mentioning John Jones hurts him at all. You know, there's always a potential. You never know what he's going to do. We haven't seen it yet.
Plus, yeah. UFC 260, John versus Jan. That just sells itself.
Yeah.
Jed, let me go back to you, because we brought this topic up about a month ago on the show, and the answer for you was Dominic Reyes was the best 205 pounder in the world now that John Jones was moving up to heavyweight. You've also been very high on the upcoming fight between Thiago Santos and Glover Teixeira to actually answer that question. So you started with Reyes, and then you went to that fight to determine who the best 205er in the world is. Now that this fight is over and Jan Blachowicz has the belt, is he not the best 205er in the world? Or did people just overrate Dominic Reyes? Like, where are you at on this discussion now that UFC 253 is over and we have a champion crowned?
Yeah, so I was wrong. That's just what it is. Like, I think Dominic Reyes was the best 205er because he beat John Jones. Like, the judges didn't give it to him, but I think a majority of people gave him that fight because I think I believe he beat John Jones. I also thought Thiago Santos beat John Jones, but that was very close, whereas I thought the Reyes fight was fairly clear. And so by that nature, you are what your record says you are. And so I thought Dominic Reyes kind of deserved it. And so by those merits, him fighting Jan Blachowicz made sense to me, I guess, as the 205 crowning fight. But I didn't think Jan Blachowicz really deserved it, because Jan Blachowicz's run at light heavyweight is only a 3-fight win streak. You know, Corey Anderson is a good win, a split decision over Jacare Souza. Like, it just didn't. And then knocking out Luke Rockhold is not a 205 killer. So I just didn't think Jan was of the four people in that kind of little group. I thought Jan was the fourth as far as terms of merit, but then he went out and knocked Dom Reyes out. So he's the number one guy now. Like, I think a rematch with him and Teixeira probably may well go the same. Maybe it doesn't. And that's kind of one of the fun things. Like, 205 is now really open because maybe Jan's just a bad matchup for Reyes. Maybe Teixeira's a bad matchup for him. But, you know, maybe Glover or Reyes or somebody else a bad matchup for Teixeira. It's now I can see a time coming where it was like a couple of years, you know, right before John came, where the title changed hands a lot and things moved around. And that's always fun and pretty exciting, even if maybe it's not the best promotional tool.
What do you think, Brad? Do you think Jan Blachowicz, this is a question we talked about in the post-fight show, do you think Jan Blachowicz has the wherewithal and the ability to be the 205-pound champion for a long time? Or do you think this is going to be kind of a short reign here?
I think it's going to change hands. You know, I don't think he's going to, you know, pull like a John Jones or anything like that. I was going to say, I mean, if Santos beat John and Santos beat Jan, then Santos is the uncrowned champ right now, right? So I hope he beats Teixeira so we can see him fight Jan and kind of figure that out. But I don't think Jan's going to stay on top for a long time or anything. I think it's going to change hands a little bit and it's going to figure itself out.
It's going to end up with Jiří Prochazka.
Yeah.
I think they should do Jiří versus Dominic Reyes. I think that's the fight to make.
That's it. Oh, well, that's a pretty good one. Okay. I'm not going to say, I mean, the Alexander Rakic fight there, I think is good, but that's also not a bad one.
Yeah. I think if Reyes won, it would have been Rakic versus Prochazka, but now that Reyes has lost two in a row, you got to do Jiří and see if he's really that guy.
One and a half. I'd love to see him. He lost one and a half.
One and a half. Yeah. One and a quarter maybe. Cause I scored that for Reyes too, but everyone. I'm scoring this round for Brian Kelleher. He is on the board. He ties things up as we head to our next topic. I can't believe we're doing this, but Conor McGregor versus Dana White is round three. I'm like just mad even talking about this, but, as you all know, these two have had their moments on social media over the past few months. They've had their moments behind the microphone, and it came to a head more than ever last week when Conor released a bunch of screenshots from a conversation with Dana White in regards to booking a fight with Diego Sanchez, of all people, and trying to keep him active, make the season go on after the win over Cerrone. Justin Gaethje was mentioned for a possible fight in July, and so forth and so on, but Conor has accused Dana White of lying, and Dana is accusing Conor of breaking the bro code. 2020, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, who is right in this situation? Or how do I phrase this? Who is less wrong in this situation?
You can't break the man code, man. You can't do it. But yeah, you know what? Honestly, like Dana White never loses, right? Let's be honest. Like the guy is he's the president of the company. He makes all the decisions, and the train just keeps on rolling. It really doesn't matter what happens to any fighter. We've seen it. We've all thought like Conor had so much power in this business, and maybe he has even more power than the business itself. But we see now that that's not the case, and that the business always reigns supreme. So I think they both kind of did each other dirty, you know. But that's the business. And honesty is not really the policy all the time here. So it's expected, I guess. But they're both rich, and they're both on somewhere out there on a yacht. And I think they both win really in life. So that's my opinion.
Damn it. I was very against everything Brian said until he ended it with the most correct possible take of these are two rich guys just arguing about who said what. Like, no one wins here. They're already winning. This doesn't mean anything to them because they're doing very well financially. This is really stupid, and I hate that it's a thing. I tried really hard not to follow this story whatsoever because it has all the hallmarks of something I just could not care less about. And then you said we were going to have to talk about it. So I went and read, and pretty clearly, Conor McGregor is in the right here. Dana makes one good point, which I'll bring up in a second, but Dana's don't break the man code thing Sure, if we just even want to accept that, I guess, fine. Except for Connor's response of, you just told a bunch of lies about me, is absolutely correct, and that is itself a violation of the man code. And Dana's just mad Connor has receipts. Like, I'm sorry, bruh. If you're going to lie, just be better at it. Like, it's not hard to lie. It's not hard to say things that are not true. Just don't leave, like, a very obvious paper trail behind. But, again, why would Dana care? In the end, he's going to win because he is the more powerful of the two. The one thing that Dana says that's correct, he should have not said the bro code stuff at all and should have been like, yeah, man, I lie all the time. What are you – you guys know this, and I'm still going to do it. You're never going to stop me. What he should have just said is, okay, cool, but Connor, why in God's name are you trying to get a fight with Diego Sanchez? Because what he said about you being the number three ranked fighter in the world trying to fight 39-year-old Diego Sanchez coming off an ass beating like that, 100% holds up. Like, that's a terrible look for Connor, and he shouldn't have said it. Like, he should have never been pro fighting Diego, certainly not after a loss like that. So everything's terrible. I hate this, but Connor's absolutely in the right here.
So one of the things Connor said, Jed, is that after all the tweets and all the screenshots, everything, he ends it with, I'm fighting Manny Pacquiao in the Middle East. Who gives a shit? He says he's retired from MMA. He's still being tested by USADA on private yachts and all this crap, but now he's, while being under contract with the UFC, being the UFC's biggest star in cash cow, he thinks that he's going to go box Manny Pacquiao. How can this happen, Jed? Like, do you believe that this is actually a thing? Because both sides like seem to be in. Is this real? Like, can he box Manny Pacquiao without the UFC's like full on consent here?
No, he's not going to do it without it. He's going to do it with it. That's what he said. He said in one of the tweets, because Dana was like, I don't know, I thought he's retired, blah. And Connor was like, you do know. You're in the contract negotiations. Because he is. Like, he has to be. And I, like, straight up, I am astonished Connor ever came back to MMA. After the Mayweather, like, he's not a real boxer, so he can't have, like, a lifelong career there. But he can make substantially more, boxing. And he probably has, like, three boxing matches in him before the jig's up and people just don't want to pay to see him anymore. So, like, instead of getting his ass beat by Connor, which was a foregone conclusion, I mean, I guess he's – or ass beat by Khabib, which was a foregone conclusion – I mean, I guess he still got paid a lot of money, but like, he can just box Manny Pacquiao. He can rematch Mayweather, and then he can really just take one last ass beating against somebody really good. Like, pick one. I don't know. Lomachenko. Connor's bigger than Lomachenko. Some shit like that. It'd be fine. And he can make $500 million doing that or whatever, instead of making $50 million to fight Justin Gaethje in a bout that would be awesome and my pick for the greatest fight we could put together at this point, but will certainly cost him brain cells one way or another. So yeah, I'm stunned that it hasn't happened sooner. And of course he's fighting Manny Pacquiao. Of course he's doing it.
All right, Brian, what do you think is more likely? Connor has two boxing matches, or he has one boxing match, one MMA fight? Like, will he box twice before coming back to MMA? Like, does he fight in the octagon again? Like, what do you think happens here with all this bananas craziness going on?
Yeah, I think he'll probably do the one boxing with Manny and then go back to MMA, kind of see how things unfold with Gaethje and Khabib. It's like, what's the point of the whole retired talk and the word if you're getting tested on these yachts while you're, you know, like, I don't understand that. Like, you're not really retired. I guess it's all just kind of hype and just headlines and keep yourself relative out there. That's all it's for. But obviously Dana knows more than what he's saying. And if he's in, you know, contract with him with Manny, I don't know why he's playing like he's not and what that is, but I think he'll fight Manny and then come back to MMA. I think he just really wants that Khabib revenge. And if he doesn't get that, I think he's just unhappy. And I think that shows, and that's kind of where their turmoil begins. And, you know, we got to kind of wait and see what happens. I think if Gaethje wins, that gives him a clear cut path to fight Gaethje though for the title, but it would be kind of messed up to not give Khabib a rematch if that happens. So it's kind of tricky. I think he'll come back to MMA though, after Pacquiao, if that's what's happening next.
Jed, does Connor have the same oomph that he's had like over the last few years, or do you think people are getting a little sick and tired of all this at this point?
No, Connor's totally fine. Connor's the same level of draw as he was 2 years. I mean, we saw Donald Cerrone. Like, Donald Cerrone didn't really bring eyeballs to that. Like, it's Conor. People, you know, you can maximize it. You can give him more or less interesting fights or things like that. But, I mean, he's not going anywhere. He's got the star power where people will still go out and watch Mike Tyson fight people because they really like it. And Mike Tyson hasn't been good in two decades now. Like, it's star power just doesn't go away, and Conor's got it in spades. You can say anything else you want about it, but that man knows how to captivate an audience. So he's going to be fine, and whatever he chooses to do, I think he'll box Manny Pacquiao, and then I think he'll fight MMA again. But, you know, I'd probably do it kind of an alternating basis like that. But, yeah, he's going to be fine.
How do you see it from a fighter's perspective, Brian, when you look at Conor? Because Conor, huge star, changed the business in a lot of ways, went over to boxing. Many believe that he created different opportunities for fighters on that end. When you see Conor in the news and it's just like, oh, man, here we go again. Like, how do you react to it? Are you like, yeah, I'm excited to see what Conor's going to do. This could be good for us. Or are you just like rolling your eyes at this point and thinking about when you're going to fight again?
I mean, I kind of just want to see the guy fight again and keep his momentum going. I don't really get too crazy with the headline stuff. I feel like it's just completely different than your reign to get to the top when you're already there. You've made millions and millions. It's just not the same. You could tell the motivation's not the same. The pre-fight press conferences aren't the same as when he was coming up and he had that flair about him. I miss those days, you know, like that's the best times. It's the same with music. When rappers make music, they make their best music when they're coming up before they make it, you know, and then when they make it, they kind of fall off and they get complacent. You see that in fighting as well. And I've seen that with Conor, and that kind of pushes me away a little bit, but I just want to see him get back to fighting. If that's what he loves, if that's what he's still going to do, you know, get back to MMA and try to get that revenge again. Khabib if you have to, and that's what I would like to see.
I like that analogy. It was excellent, and in a close battle like we have, that'll be what puts you over the top, Brian Kelleher. 2-1 as we head into the final question of regulation. We've had some interesting events over the last few weeks. We had that event on the 12th. We had Covington versus Woodley. Then we had UFC 253. That thing's been circled on our calendars for a little while as the UFC head back to Fight Island. Now we have another event coming up this Saturday. Headlines by Holly Holm versus Irene Aldana. And while that's an interesting fight for the 135-pound division, especially if Aldana wins, compared to the last couple of cards, this one's lacking a little bit. So, Jed, we're going to start with you. How do you grade this Saturday's card as a follow-up to UFC 253?
This card's a D. This card has like four people that anyone's ever heard of. I mean, straight up, like half the people on this card don't have a Wikipedia page, which is never a good sign. Maybe it'll end up being some fun fights. Like, it's, that is always a possibility, especially when, you know, to kind of feed off of what Brian was just saying about Conor, when you're young and in the come up, you're grinding a lot harder. You're trying to compete a lot harder. So, you know, a lot of no name people that are on this card are going to be more incentivized to fight their asses off. And so, you know, the end result might be good, but on paper, I mean, the main event is not something that really catches your eye unless you are deep in the game. The co-main event is are like very similar in that regard. And then like straight up, the only other fight that anyone who outside of like hardcore MMA fans are going to have any idea what's going on is Carlos Condit, Court McGee. And that fight has a really high likelihood of depressing the shit out of me. So, it's not a good card. It's fine, honestly, as sort of a palate cleanser from 253, because we had a big buildup, obviously. And this is just one of those things. We're going to have a lot more cards where a lot of them will be filled with people who have less names, just because the UFC still has to put on like 36 events before the end of the year. So they're firing an event every week to get in their deadline.
Brian, what do you think? Jed's giving it a D. When you look at this card from a fan's perspective on paper, how do you grade it right now?
I'll give it a D plus just to throw a little bit more positivity into the mix. But I'm kind of with them, you know. I just feel like since the pandemic started, the UFC's kind of just been rallying off fights that don't always make sense or aren't the biggest, you know, significance behind them. And they're just kind of given fights and different matchups that that are kind of just surprising and not everything's making sense right now. It's just whoever wants to fight could fight pretty much. But yeah, I mean, coming after UFC 253, it's definitely not the best comparison or follow-up. And, you know, Holly Holm, Irene Aldana, you know, we're looking for somebody that could possibly test Nunez at some point. And, you know, Holly Holm's already lost to her, so there's really not much excitement, you know, if she wins, unless she, like, flat-out knocks her out, crazy exciting finish or something. But, like, there's just not much behind that, so it's hard to get really excited about this card. But it is, you know, young fighters that are on the come up, and that could make for exciting finishes. So you can't really say it's terrible until it's over. But as far as significance goes and name value and stuff like that, there's not really much to show.
Jed, as Brian sort of alluded to, I mean, I honestly believe that Irene Aldana should be fighting for the title at her next fight anyways. I thought the knockout of Vieira was enough. We needed a fresh face. She was that and then some. And now she's going to fight Holly Holm. Most people expect Aldana to win this fight. But what if Holly Holm turns back the clock and beats Irene Aldana? What if this happens? Can she get another shot at the title? Can the UFC justify this? Because that's what she's going to want. Can they do it?
If Holly Holm wins, just tear up the title. Like, it doesn't, it's like, it's just give crown Amanda Nunes champion in perpetuity and we're just done. It's just Irene Aldana is at least a fresh face, at least is something different. Holm cannot defeat Amanda Nunes unless the birth of her child just makes Nunes fall off a cliff. Like, that would be the only way. And Holly Holm, no. Holly Holm's 38 years old. Like, no, she can't do it. Like, that's the end. I'm sorry. Athletic careers have a cap, and I would assume that Holly Holm's is very, very near hers. She is a former UFC champion, probably a Hall of Famer, really good fighter, but she's won, like, three of her last 10 fights or something insane like that. Hasn't really looked good, arguably, since the Ronda Rousey knockout. I mean, the Becht-Gohea fight, I guess, looks good there, but it's also Becht-Gohea, so I mean, it's just, if she wins, that's probably the worst case scenario for the UFC, frankly, and for the fans, because Irene Aldana is fun. Like, that would be a fun, different look for Amanda Nunes. So fingers crossed for all our sakes that Irene Aldana does not, who she is actually, I believe, the betting underdog, but let's hope she comes through in this one.
All right, Jed, let me ask you this, because we love when cards like this come around. We love asking this question. You gave the best sales pitch ever on Gerald Meerschaert versus Ed Herman as a sneaky fight. What's the one here?
I love that fight.
I hope they make it.
Even after Meerschaert got by Khamzat, I still love that fight.
What's the one here?
Oh, man. That is a tough call. I'm looking at the card now. Loma Lubumi Jinyu Frey is actually, like, I probably should have included that in the list of fights that are notable or relevant, because that's at least, like, in strawweight's just a really fun division. And so even any fight in there is probably going to be okay. Oh, let me figure out. Let me just take a look here. Casey Kinney is not really that interesting. Oh, man, it's tough. I mean, when in doubt, just go with the heavies. So Jorgen De Castro, Carlise Philippe, just swing them thangs, man. See what happens.
Brian, what's your boom under the radar fight on this card that you're just like, oh man, this is going to be crazy.
I wouldn't even say fight, but I was just looking at the card too. I feel like Charles Jourdain is a guy that I find a lot of interest in. You know, his fight against Feely was really exciting. It was really close. And Feely's, you know, a top guy in that division. So I want to see how he rebounds in this fight. I feel like he has a lot of potential, and he can make a name for himself at featherweight. But I think other than that, I would say Juliana Pena versus Durandamy. I think especially if Pena wins, that gives like a fresh, you know, coat of paint for that division. As someone who can potentially challenge for a title.
Should be an interesting card. Go ahead, Jed.
So this isn't a fun fight, but I was just thinking about it because it's not like I expect this to be really one-way traffic. But the Daquan Townshend, Desko Todorovic. Todorovic is, I think, a Cage Warriors champion or former champion. And like an interesting prospect. Daquan Townshend has a really cool nickname. Like the Tarantula is a pretty cool nickname. He's probably gonna get beat like pretty bad, but that's at least like there's an interesting side to that fight because Todorovic is like at least an interesting prospect worth taking a gander at, seeing how he's gonna. It's got to be his UFC debut. I'm almost certain it's his UFC debut.
Yeah, he was on the Contender Series. He was supposed to fight John Phillips.
Yeah, that's right.
14 times.
Yeah, the John Phillips fight fell through like 700 times. So, yeah, I mean, he's making his UFC debut and a guy with some fashion of a pedigree. I guess that's probably the most interesting outside of the name fights.
Todorovic's injury may have been the most significant of 2020 because without him withdrawing from that fight, there would be no Khamzat Chimaev to start that train.
Well,
think about that.
We're all lucky for it. 2020's Fighter of the Year right there.
Poor Dusko. He's like, man, all I had to do was just fight John Phillips and I could have been this. I could have been Khamzat right now.
Give him a title fight just for that.
Yes, give him the title fight. If he beats Daquan Townsend, just give him the title fight. So speaking of this isn't a title fight, contender fight, so to speak. We're going to the final question. Jed Meshew has evened up the odds. So this is what we're going to do because we have no champion. This is the final question. As you know, this is the knockout round. One question will decide it all. Neither of these gentlemen know what the question is. In fact, until about 18 seconds ago, I didn't know what the question was. Oh, but wow. I'm just going to roll with it. Okay. Yeah, I literally told Casey, I'm like, I have no idea what the final question is going to be. No clue. He threw out a couple of suggestions. And I'm going to go with one of them. But Jed, I need a number from between 1 and 25.
8.
Mr. Boom?
19.
16 is the correct answer. So Brian, because this is not the Price is Right, it's close to the number. Do you want to answer this question first or would you like to go second?
I'll go first.
All right.
Okay.
He's going first. Normally this does not
pay off. Taking the momentum.
But I like it. I like it. So here's the question. All right. You are a fighter, but you're a fan. You're an analyst, so to speak, as well. So let's talk about this. UFC has lots of very interesting divisions right now. So my question is, if you as were the matchmaker and could create one pay-per-view for the UFC, which is one weight class, which weight class would you showcase for an entire night of fights and why? 60 seconds going on the clock. Your time starts now, Mr. Kelleher.
So as far as weight class, I think I would go lightweight for sure. You got so much in that weight class, so many top guys, finishers. They got speed, they got power, they got it all. Gaethje, Khabib, Ferguson, Poirier, Hooker, Connor comes back in. GSP drops down to lightweight, challenges Khabib for the best, the GOAT essentially. So there's just a lot that could happen in that weight class, and that weight class is probably the deepest in my opinion. So I would have to stick with lightweight.
All right, with 25 seconds to spare, Ryan Kelleher going with 155. We put a minute back on the clock. We head on over to the former Between the Links champion. Mr. Kelleher is going with a lightweight showcase for UFC 285. Jed, how are you booking it? What weight class are you showcasing from start to finish? Your time starts now.
So Boom is objectively correct. Lightweight's the best division in the sport by a mile. No, and that's not even a downgrade on any of the other ones. Like it's lightweight is just incredible. After that, I know the hipster one would be bantamweight right now. People love them some bantamweights at the moment, and with good reason. Part of me wants to say heavyweight just because I think heavyweight's hilarious, but it probably wouldn't lead to a lot of good things. But I'm going to swerve you. I'm pivoting hard here. Women's featherweight, because it's not a division. It doesn't exist. It doesn't even have rankings on the UFC.com rankings page. But if we made a whole pay-per-view dedicated to the division, then by definition, we have to build a division. They have to sign new fighters. They have to get a bunch of people there. And then Amanda Nunes can have opponents to fight there if UFC will only commit to making that a real division. So put every 145er you can find in the world in that and build us a division.
Interesting. I like it. We saw this from two different angles. That was a beautiful answer from both competitors. Yes. So let us head on over to the man, the judge, E. Casey Lydon. You've heard the arguments, Casey. You see the crystal. You see Jed's smile. How do you rule, sir?
Lightweight, women's featherweight. Wow. All right. I've made my decision.
I have oat milk in here.
That cannot nothing to do with your decision, Casey.
Okay, I have to recalibrate my decision. Your winner and the new number one contender. Boom! Brian Kelleher.
Brian Kelleher!
Oh, I took a gamble, baby.
Look, I'm sweating like an animal here.
Wow. Oh. I took a gamble.
Okay, my personal answer.
I thought about it until Casey goes lightweight, women's featherweight, and I was like, "That's not a great look."
I thought you might have tugged on the heartstrings in a fascinating way there, Jed, but not to be. Brian Kelleher going first pays off for him. You are the winner, and with that, you don't get any money or a championship belt, but you're not the champion anyways, but at least you get to come back next week and challenge for the title. But you do get 30 seconds to discuss whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, and different in the sport of mixed martial arts, whatever
call
you want.
Call out someone, Brian. Call them out hard.
Well, 30 seconds, yeah. I say Simon Says, November 7th, let's get this going in Vegas, baby. Business is booming as usual. And I'm coming to kill. So thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's the bottom line, because Brian Boom Kelleher said so.
Simon, you don't want those problems. Jed is now dead. I got the problems. You don't want them. You don't want those problems.
Now he's going to be your manager and your mouthpiece, Brian. How do you feel? Oh, you beat him and now he's going to work with you.
Please.
Yes, we're going to WWE next.
I'm in. Couldn't be more in.
Come on up. My son's been like sitting behind me.
Back there.
Can I get on computer? Can
Lurking.
I get
up there?
We can't. I can't even see you. There you are.
There he is. The real there champ.
See, that's going to be me behind you, Brian, right there. Just picking up behind, talking the shit, and then throwing me in the cage.
That's hilarious. Well, thank you guys for watching and listening to Between the Links this week. Thank you to Jed. Thank you to Brian. Big shout out to Casey Lydon on the production and with the judging, Esther Lynn behind the scenes with the graphics. We'll see you back here once again, right here next week on Between the Links. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
This has been Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck. Brought to you by MMA Fighting, a production of Vox Media.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.